Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Ron, we're talking about the Everyone Goes Home program today, and I know that there is a safety summit that promotes the message of Everyone Goes Home and the initiatives that those who are interested in this topic could attend the summit. When's it coming up, and tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Okay, the 2010 Everyone Goes Home Safety Summit is scheduled for March 5th, 6th, and 7th, which is just about a month away. And we have a program, obviously, every year. This is our third year, and this program is to bring all the state and regional advocates that work on behalf of the Fallen Firefighters Foundation in the Everyone Goes Home program, delivering courage to be safe and other Everyone Goes Home programs. But not only the advocates, but also other folks interested in safety. I think right now we have about 180 people registered. We have a variety of safety-oriented courses. We have Dennis Compton, who's chairman of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, who will be addressing us on Friday. We have general delivery. We have Chief Mario Trevino talking with us about firefighter cancer. We have a series of workshops on a variety of safety issues on Saturday in the afternoon. In the morning during the general session, we have Chief Calvin Cochran, who, as you know, is the U.S. Fire Administrator. We have the four major fire service magazines are going to be doing a panel discussion. We have an advocate roundtable on Sunday. And we close out with a very thought-provoking presentation by Deputy U.S. Fire Administrator, retired Charlie Dickinson. So we have if you want to see a whole host of details related to that itinerary, you can go to the website everyonegoeshome.com, and right at the top of the page, you can click on the Safety Summit, and you can look at the itinerary for the weekend. If you would like to register to come to the class, and I think all registration is only going to be open for a few more days, that same link has a registration form on it. You can, if you can make your hotel reservations and your flight reservations, there's no charge for the summit.
So the summit's free to attend. All they have to do is just pay to get there and pay for a hotel room. You can't beat that.
The space is limited, so people who are really interested in going to the summit should get online as quickly as possible and get registered so that we can give them a great experience at the National Fire Academy, as you know it always is.
Okay. That's www.everyonegoeshome, all one word, everyonegoeshome.com, and then you can just click on the events, and there is information there about the 2010 Firefighter Life Safety Summit in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Thanks, Ron. We're going to get back to the podcast show now and talk a little bit more about Everyone Goes Home.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hello. Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm the host, Rich Gassaway, and we are in Chicago, Illinois, with Billy Hayes and Ron Dennis, and had a chance to sit down with the two of them and talk about the Everyone Goes Home program and some of the initiatives that they're involved with. Ron Dennis is the executive director of the Arizona Fire Chiefs Association and the training liaison for the Everyone Goes Home program. Billy Hayes is the director of community affairs for the Washington, D.C. Fire Department, and he's the advocate manager for the Everyone Goes Home program. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you.
Let's start out with the simple question. What is the Everyone Goes Home program?
Well, the Everyone Goes Home program is a certain number of classes and endeavors that the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation is moving forward as part of the 16 initiatives which came out of the Tampa 2004 summit. And out of that summit came the 16 initiatives, and then each year the Fallen Firefighters Foundation submits for an Assistance to Fire grants, and to move the initiatives forward through a number of different avenues. And the Everyone Goes Home program is the umbrella program that moves those things forward. So within that, you have Courage to be Safe and a number of other endeavors that we're working on.
Okay, before we run too far ahead and everyone goes home, what are the 16 initiatives that you're speaking of, Ron, and how did they come about?
Well, at the summit in 2004 in Tampa, a number of fire service professionals were invited, representing a host of organizations throughout the United States. I wasn't there, but as I understand, there are about 230 fire professionals that were there, and they were divided into groups, and they came up with six domains: wildland firefighting, structural firefighting, fire prevention, public education, those types of things. And within those domains, they identified 16 specific initiatives that could be used as a blueprint for taking action to stop line of duty deaths and injuries.
Okay, and then the Everyone Goes Home program, then does that teach the attendees what the initiatives are and how they can implement them? How does that work?
Well, the foundation actually took ownership of the 16 initiatives. Obviously, the fire service owns the initiatives, but the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation obviously has the greatest amount of interest to try to reduce line of duty deaths. So they kind of took ownership and created the program Everyone Goes Home as a flagship program to encompass the 16 life safety initiatives, develop training, develop resources, which I know we'll get into just a little bit later. However, with that program, there's a multitude of avenues, and we see a lot of success coming from where we've been in the last, this is going into our fifth year, as Chief Dennis mentioned, through grant funding with not only the Assistance to Firefighter grant, but also with funding from Fireman's Fund Insurance and a couple other areas. So that's how it's come about. That's where we're at with it, with the program specifically.
Okay. How are you guys getting the message out? I see the Everyone Goes Home logo out there. I hear the message periodically in things that I read. What's the plan for getting the message out about the initiatives and how departments can change behavior?
Well, the primary course that's delivered that teaches people about the initiatives and gets them to focus on those items that were brought about in Tampa is the Courage to be Safe program. It's about a 3.5-4 hour training program that it would be really needed if all 33,000 fire departments had those embedded in as a safety program within their organization. You know, over 1 million firefighters in America. And obviously that hasn't happened yet, but we're working to deliver that program. A lot of the ways that we get that delivered is, I think I'll let Billy speak to the state-by-state endeavor, if we just do it state-by-state through our advocate program. But in addition, as many conferences and seminars and organizations that we can get to embed that Courage to be Safe program, we deliver that by delivering Courage to be Safe train to trainer. In other words, teaching other trainers how to teach the Courage to be Safe program, and then they go out and they teach it within their community colleges, their fire departments, their fire academies, their local and state conferences and things like that. But it's a multi-pronged approach, and then there's a lot of support materials that we'll talk about when we talk about training, but the advocate program is the key to making that happen, which Billy's in charge of.
Yeah, and you said it earlier with the name of the group, Leadership, and of course leadership is only effective as the followership with it. So, and I say that to mean that we've got to reach down to the line firefighters, because that's where we actually have to start making that culture change with the attitudes and behaviors with the crews who are were actually responding to the emergency incidents. So in order to do that, we have to develop branding and marketing plans and programs that can reach the firefighters down to the lowest level, to where they have an understanding of how important firefighter safety is, how the 16 initiatives really has to do with their job. And as I've gone through my career, and I noticed so many firefighters really don't understand what the NFCs are, the National Fire Codes, and they think it's something that just stays in the fire marshal's office, when in fact everything that we do in the fire service is in the NFC codes. And you know, I say that to say that the 16 initiatives may not be relevant to a firefighter saying, well, it was 16 initiatives, I get paid to respond and, you know, mitigate an emergency. But really they have to do everything with the job, because how they go about mitigating that emergency and their everyday actions, that's where we're trying to implement those 16 initiatives. And as Ron said, with the Courage to Be Safe program, we've developed a great network of instructors out there and trainers, but the, probably the most effective way we have is our advocate program. And again, that's under my responsibility as the advocate manager. We are set up similar to the FEMA model. We have 10 regions, and we follow the FEMA model. So we have 10 regional advocates, almost like the field supervisors or the battalion chiefs, so to speak. And then within each state, we have a minimum of one state advocate. Some states have multiple. Obviously, Texas and California, some of the larger states, have many more. But what we do with those state advocates is they're like they're the crews out there coordinating what's going on in the state. They're figuring out which conferences are occurring in their state that we can have the display booth at, or we can pass out literature, the black armbands that we like to see the firefighters wearing. They know where the trainings are going on. They know who the key individuals at the state training academies are, so we can embed the Courage to Be Safe program, because unfortunately, you know, right now we're living year to year off a grant. And we have to look, we have to have a vision beyond that grant. So looking at getting the programs out there, the Courage to Be Safe, and we have Safety Through Leadership. Chief Ron Sarnicky, the executive director of the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, created a new program called LAC that's still in a development stage, which will soon roll out. And LAC stands for Leadership, Accountability, Culture, and Knowledge. And he's put together a great program. I know he's still refining that, so soon that'll be out as a training opportunity. And I know Chief Dennis is going to talk more about that. But with that, we're trying to reach the firefighters to make a difference, because truly that's where we're going to see the culture change. Fire chiefs can sit around a table and talk all they want and strategize, but just like in the military, the generals can do that. But if the field troops and they're not implementing the plan, it does no good. So,
okay. You guys have both mentioned the Courage to Be Safe program. Somebody out there listening might be wondering, is this the kind of program that I would want to bring to my department? So I'm going to give the two of you just a couple of minutes to give them a snippet of what they might be exposed to. What messages are they going to be hearing? What are they going to be learning? What could you say to them that would jazz them up and say, we want to have that program brought to our department?
Well, the program's been put together. It's been revised several times now. I think we're up to 7. Last one we had 7.2, and Bob Colometta, who is our CDBS program manager, gave us a report yesterday that has been updated with the newest statistics. If we were going to say, here's what you're going to see and what you can expect out of the program, you're going to expect to talk about the 16 initiatives and really explore what each initiative means and how it relates to what you do every day on the job. And even not when you what you do on the job, but what you do when you go home. Because you can work out and eat safe and healthy at the firehouse, but if you go home on your 48 or 72 hours off and just blow it out with everything else, it's not really going to do you a lot of good. A lot of survivor stories, and I think that's something we really miss, is that the video pieces that we have in there are from some of our survivors. And when we talk about survivors, it's not just family members. It's also the family members at the station. We have a great segment by Charlie Dickinson, the past deputy U.S. Fire Administrator. We have Ed Mann, the Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner, who gives a great leadership example of how to make a culture change. Mrs. Margaret Brick, who lost a member with FDNY. So we have some of those pieces in there to talk about.
I concur with what Billy says, is we explore the initiatives, but we do more than that, because after working with several audiences and going through the information and the initiatives, we feel that there's more impact when the students are involved in the discussion. And in doing that, it's not a revelation. We should know this already, but there's nothing in the 16 initiatives that is new in terms of a safety message for the fire service. And anyone who's been around since the 80s know that the real blueprint for safety in the fire service in published format came with NFPA 1500. And you can take each of the initiatives, each of the domains, and you can go back to NFPA 1500. And so we truly believe that most folks that are in the room learning already know the answers. And so we don't necessarily say we're teaching them anything. We're basically drawing things out of them that they already know. And we get them to focus on the ones that are most important to them, that are closest to their hearts, and that they can get their arms around the easiest. And then we talk about those initiatives in depth. And we cover all 16 so people are aware, but we make sure the students drive the class in terms of what makes them tick. And most folks believe in safety. Most folks know what the safety issues are, and they're usually looking for a way to just make them happen in their lives and or in their organizations. Or sometimes we meet people with a revelation saying, you know, I guess I just never really took it personally. And that's what Billy talked about. There are some affective domain components to the program, in addition to cognitive domain components that you know, get you to stop and think and say, you know, if I don't do it for me, I need to do it for my loved ones at home. We make sure that people understand there's a sense of urgency. Every time a firefighter dies in the line of duty, you can almost put it on a shift calendar. About every third day, a firefighter dies in the line of duty on average. We need to find a way to make sure we involve loved ones. We have to have constant reminders. You know, the commercial industry, McDonald's, airlines, everyone else, we know everything about them because of the continuous impact and the continuous delivery of the message. We need to make sure that we celebrate our successes. And when we see folks doing things that are really along the lines of not dying in the line of duty, sometimes near misses are positive case studies, not negative case studies, because people were doing the right things. Something bad happened, but they're alive because they did the right things. So we need to do that. And so we focus on, you know, the clear sense of urgency, the involving the loved ones, displaying constant reminders, sharing best practices with each other, those kinds of things. That's what we deliver when we deliver Courage to Be Safe.
Dr. Gasway, one of the things that we do, obviously, every instructor is going to bring something different to the table. So while we have a template, the Courage to Be Safe is a template program, and you can run through it certainly and teach it directly through the template, and it's very interactive, so it's not just death by PowerPoint as you hear. But every instructor brings something unique in how they deliver the program, and Chief Dennis and I have been teaching this for several years now, and we've formed a great partnership with it. And one of the things we do is what we call an index card exercise. And as he said earlier, the answers are already in the room. We're not teaching them anything new. We're just facilitating them bringing it out. And through the index card exercise, we identify, you know, what are their safety concerns. So right off the bat, we engage the students and partner them up with each other or put them in groups to get them interacting. That's the icebreaker. And they identify safety concerns that they have. And then we'll go into, well, what is the solution? A little bit later as we go through the program, we'll offer the second step, what is the solution? And they identify what's the solution to fix the concern. But obviously we know that doesn't always stop at the solution piece, because there's a barrier to keep that solution from being implemented. So then the third step we talk about is the barriers. And then after that, towards the end of the class, we'll talk about the strategy. What is the strategy to overcome the barrier, to implement the solution, to fix the concern? And then once we did that, Chief Dennis and I were down in Charleston, we added the fifth piece to it. And once we did that and we identified what the strategies were, it related back to an initiative. And as we were in Charleston, one of the guys was sitting at the table and says, "You're playing with our minds. How'd you do that?" Because we told them that the answers were already there. And we didn't tell them anything new. They said all the answers. They said everything. They built the roadmap. And they implemented the 16 initiatives right there in the classroom. And it was really amazing to watch that process. Each time we do it, we fine-tune it a little bit more. So, you know, that's just our style. But every instructor has different styles and different passions, different stories that they bring.
Nice. So they leave the program with a game plan.
Yeah, they actually leave the program with a hard copy of information. When we teach the Courage to Be Safe, we don't give them handouts. We give them a blank piece of paper, and when they leave, it's their safety concern at their department on that piece of paper. It's their perceived solution, and they've identified what has kept it from happening before in the form of barriers. It's their strategy for overcoming those barriers, and they've already connected that whole sequence to whichever initiative or initiatives that had to do with, whether it be driving or seatbelts or heart health or any of those. So okay. It's their product.
Yeah,
they have their fingerprints on it, and it's a takeaway.
Yeah, good. That's the perfect program. What are some of the training resources available to departments that are interested in improving firefighter safety?
Well, the hard resources that have been delivered over the last 4 years has been a resource kit, and the foundation has worked really hard, put a team together, and developed resource kits that have DVDs, safety training programs, take five drills, those kinds of things, just a whole host of training topics related to safety and delivery methodology, videos, things like that. And so we had resource kit 1, 2, 3, and we just released resource kit 4 in August of this year, and which is really a good resource kit. They're professionally produced. They have interviews of major fire service individuals such as Dennis Compton and Billy Goldfeder and Charlie Dickinson and folks and Bruce Farner. And those are available for download on everyonegoeshome.com, all of those kits. I do not know if Resource Kit 4 is available, because they just mailed those out, 30-some thousand of those, to the fire departments in America. But when you go online, if you haven't gotten yours, you can click on it and enter your address and order that kit. But it won't be long. All four kits will be available. Three of them I know are available for immediate download under your computer. Any training officer or any company officer can use those as supplements to, because the initiatives themselves aren't action steps. They're philosophical statements about what we need to do, and the action steps are found in the actual training in the process. So that's one. However, there's a host of other resource sites. There's firstresponder.com, which has a lot of driving safety, roadway safety issues. We have firefighterclosecalls.com, which is run by Billy Goldfeder and Gordon Graham, which has just downloads of SOPs and best practices and case studies, the secret list. We have the IAFC Near Miss Program, which was previously put together and run by John Tippett and now is being managed by Greg Cade. And out of that comes the report of the week, and all you have to do is sign up for the report of the week. And they do a great job, Amanda McHenry and them at the ISC. They deliver that, and it's kind of like a tabletop case study drill that any company officer can just print off the computer, off their email, and there's usually four or five questions attached to that report of the week. It's a near miss. Near misses are input by people of all ages involved in the fire service, all ranks, all types of departments. It's an anonymous delivery program, and there's a lot of value there. Those are not the only resources, but those are the capstone resources that we like to give to people and say, hey, you know, here's some stuff for you. Here's some real meat.
And in addition to what Chief Dennis was saying, the CDBS instructors website, once you become a CERS...
What's the CDBS, Bill?
CERS to be safe.
Okay.
We call it CTBS. If I said D, I'm sorry, CTBSinstructors.com. And once you go through the CERS to be safe program, you can log on and go to the CDBS instructors piece, at least for the instructors. And there's a multitude of downloads and additional things that you can incorporate into the program, additional video segments. There's tutoring skills. If you're getting ready to go do a presentation, you haven't done one in a while, Bob Colometta's done a wonderful job at putting that stuff together, and it's a great resource for our instructors. So, you know, to take this program from an idea based on 16 initiatives that were formed, like Ron said, the philosophical statements, and to build a program which is based, you know, predominantly on volunteers and has been, is a monumental task, to say the least. But I think we're being effective. In fact, I know we are.
Okay. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway, with Ron Dennis, the Executive Director of the Arizona Fire Chiefs, and Billy Hayes, the Director of Community Relations for the Washington, D.C. Fire Department. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the challenges of changing the safety culture.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. Again, I'm with Ron Dennis and Billy Hayes, and we're talking about the Everyone Goes Home program and the Courage to Be Safe program. And we spent the first half of the podcast talking about what the program is and the training resources that are available. Now we're going to talk about something that's maybe on everyone's mind. It certainly is on mine. What are some of the challenges that we face in trying to change a safety culture or create a safety culture in the fire service?
You know, I'm not one that's... I say this all the time. I cannot stand the word culture. Sometimes I think it is a cop-out. It's just an excuse of for not doing the right thing and saying, well, that's our culture. Well, if your culture is for doing things wrong, then that's attitude and behavior. That's not culture. It's just simply an excuse. But with that being said, you know, as a retired chief, you know that you can provide as much equipment and you can try to have the right amount of staffing and implement training and policies and procedures, but if the attitudes and behaviors of the men and women who are following that and assigned to the trucks and responding on a daily basis, they don't meet the demands or don't meet the needs of what the fire chief has tried to implement and the deputy chief or whatever the case may be, then there's going to be a system failure. And that's what we're trying to change to see. You know, we've heard lots of things about we got to get back to a culture of extinguishment and we've gone too far and safety Nazis. You know, I don't think anybody's going to say we're just going to stand back and watch a building burn. I don't think there's a firefighter in this nation that's ever saying that. But what I think we're trying to do is have people understand what risk analysis is and what risk management is, and that's one of the initiatives we talk about of the 16 is really follow a risk management model. Can we, as a calculated risk, and I'm going to let Chief Dennis talk about this, but can we still make an aggressive interior operation but be safe doing it? And if we can't do that, then do we have the courage to say, you know, we might have to fight this from the outside until we gain control? And I think the fire service is successful when we can control the environment. When we let the environment or the scenario control us, we're playing catch up the entire time, and that's when danger occurs, that's when safety violations occur. So Chief Dennis has a great way of explaining the risk management model, so I'll let him take over from there.
Well, it's the risk management model is simple to say, hard to implement because of our type A personalities and the way we've been ingrained. But, you know, the bottom line is you look at the resources that you show up on an incident with, and you have a certain number of either simultaneous or back-to-back tasks that need to occur. for operations that need to occur to be successful in whatever mode you're in, whether you're in an offensive rescue, offensive fire attack, marginal, which is a lot of folks don't like that word, and in defensive. And if your resources, time, conditions, all those size of factors that we learn tactically as firefighters, if they don't match up, someone has to make a decision and say, we don't have the combination here. We don't have a matchup. There's no life safety. There's boards on all the windows. It's not a building to go inside of, and somebody has to make that call. And it's all about making a risk management decision. And I really, really liked what a fire officer had to say last week when I was at a two-day think tank conference, and we were talking about staffing and the impact of staffing on firefighter safety. And the individual was from a department that had about an on-duty response of about five folks, maybe six. And he basically said, as long as I let my city council and community know that I'm a one-line fire attack department and I can either do personal protection to initiate a search or fire attack, but probably not both, as long as everybody understands that, then nobody in my department is going to die, you know, because I'm a one-line department. If I get there and it's a two-line operation, I can't deploy. I have to back off and be defensive or whatever. And I thought that was a great analogy. Recognize what your capabilities are, and you have to make a matchup. The challenge, back to what your challenges are, is our psyches don't let us do that. If there's multiple tasks that need to be done and we show up with less resources than are necessary to do those tasks, we have a tendency to try to pick up the slack and do the multiple tasks ourselves. And then that's where we get into trouble. We get out of position. We overexert ourselves and have heart attacks. We put other people out of position. We get ourselves in a situation where people have to rescue us. I mean, you can list the number of things that will occur. We have to learn how to not make those pick up the slack type decisions. Hard for our personalities in the careers that we've chosen, but we got to do it because we got to save firefighters' lives.
And even going beyond just the fire ground operations, let's talk about the simple things before we ever leave the firehouse. Health and wellness, going and getting physicals. You know, I've had firefighters say, well, if the city's not paying for it, well, I'm not going to go. Well, even though your insurance, you know, you have good insurance in departments, in most departments anyway, and it's a copay to go get a physical and see where you are in your health and life. That's a simple step that you take ownership of. And not wait for the department or the organization. So trying to get people to see that, you know, to work out. And when I say work out, you know, I've seen it happened in my department where I was former fire chief. You know, we buy weights and everything, and guys just get out there and completely max out on bench pressing and lifting and everything else. And their muscle exertion and tone is just, they're exhausted. Well, what happens when the call drops in about 3 hours and they're so sore they can't move? So we have to have a balanced health and wellness program in the department. You know, what is the right amount of weights to lift? The running the treadmills, cardiovascular health, eating, healthy eating habits, but even to getting in the apparatus and putting your seatbelt on. And, you know, you can ask a lot of firefighters, and we've had them tell us that, yeah, when I'm in my personal car, I put my seatbelt on. But for whatever reason, when I get on the fire truck, I never wear my seatbelt. And it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, that comes from, you know, we've heard, well, you can't put your air packs on. You can't get turned out. You can't do this. You can't do that wearing your seatbelt. Well, when you have engineers or technicians who are driving the apparatus, not wearing their seatbelts, they have nothing else to do but put their seatbelt on and drive. So trying to get that culture change to occur. And those are some challenges. Obviously, the Brian Hunton seatbelt pledge, National Seatbelt Pledge is out. Trying to get people to sign it. But, you know, they sign it and then they still don't wear their seatbelt. So there's a lot of challenges we have to overcome.
One of the biggest challenges is just the sheer numbers. We want folks to do safety things because they've decided to do them, not because we think, you know, not because policy says to do it or there will be discipline. in the process. We want people to really believe that safety should be the first thing that they're responsible for, in addition to their response abilities as firefighters or EMTs. 33,000 fire departments in America. If we have 1,000 trainers out there training, you know, 100 people a month, you can do the math. None of us are going to live long enough to see us hit that final 1 millionth firefighter in training. We have to find a way to embed this program, at least in its philosophy, in other organizations, in states, in fire academies, so that it's a way of life. You know, that the 16 initiatives are really our blueprint for managing the safety parts of our job. Mm-hmm. And that by itself is a challenge, no matter how good we're doing, is how we're going to hit those kinds of numbers. We're not going to hit those kinds of numbers going to conferences that other people are coming to go to the class. Because when you look at the total number of firefighters in America and you compare the number of people who come to conferences, there's a big gap. We have to get that thing, the safety issues and the safety training to the grassroots level, the fire company officers, the firefighters on the street.
And I think a challenge is, one of the challenges we really have, and again, we're not sitting here saying that you never go into a burning building. That's not what we're saying. We all signed on for this job knowing what the risks are, and you know, there is a certain level of excitement. So I wouldn't dare say this to you know, any firefighter that you never, ever go in. You know, there's a calculated risk that you have to take. What we're saying is that those exceptions of when you really have an opportunity to save a life in conditions that are beyond what some risk models say, geez, you shouldn't go in there, but you know there's a life. Those are some of those rare occasions, and we do lose firefighters in those situations who are trying to make that heroic grab. Seldom is that the case, though, and a lot of, more of the opportunities or the line of duty deaths occur when we have non-savable buildings or we just completely lose situational awareness, and that's what we're trying to prevent. But going back to the challenge piece is that we want firefighters to understand there's a huge group of people who are impacted when a life is lost. And you can go to the National Fallen Firefighter Memorial Service and see that firsthand. You can see the children when that flag is placed in their hand on that Sunday of the memorial service and the rose over the flag. The kids, they no longer have a parent there. You know, they've lost a parent, whether it's a mom or a dad, a son or daughter. You know, it's just a huge impact. It also impacts the department. You know, there's some departments that are still having a tough time. When we were in Charleston, they're well on their way to recovery, but it's still an issue that they lost 9 of their brothers down there that aren't coming back. So it's a huge impact, and we want people to understand that. Just be safe. Think about the repercussions of your actions. And, you know, we obviously want everyone to go home.
What are some of the successes you've had with the program so far?
Well, the biggest successes I've seen is the feedback from folks who have actually walked away from discussions or classes with tools. They walked away with resource kits, and they've seen the information on there and said, hey, this is something I can use in my department. So knowing that somebody is going to use, you know, their takeaways. I just got an email from an individual that we had in a class recently in the trainer that became certified as a trainer, and it was a month ago, and he's already got a blueprint for delivering the entire program to his department, and he emailed us both and said, this is my plan, what do you think? And so that's a success, because that's feedback that people are using the information. A visual thing that we're looking at right now in 1 year doesn't tell a tale, but 2-3 years ago it was pretty much a trend that 25 or 30 firefighters died in the line of duty in a roadway incident of some kind, either going to, coming from, or being hit by a vehicle in a car accident, something like that. Right now we have less than a dozen. I think we're at 9, as a matter of fact. It was pretty apparent that the majority of those roadway incidents were volunteers and POVs, and in the second highest category were tankers or tenders, driven by inexperienced, young, older, improperly outfitted units, things like that. And the last couple years, we've seen that trend go down. We're hoping that the safety behaviors that we're promoting, you know, make sure you're trained, make sure that you don't drive code 3. If you don't have to go code 3 in these types of vehicles, they weren't designed for that. Whatever the behavior is, we're hoping that those behaviors are what's causing this trend, and we're hoping that it continues. But to look at the LODD statistics for the last couple of years, and see a significant drop in an area that has been really a problem in the fire service, that's pretty encouraging. And then we also encourage folks to share successes when we're teaching classes. And a lot of folks are saying, you know, this happened or this happened. And when you read their near miss reports, you can start to see near misses. The reason there wasn't a line of duty death or serious injury is because certain safety procedures were being followed. And those are, we turn those around and we talk about those as successes. So those are some of the ones I've observed.
Greg Collier, who is our Region 1 and 2 advocate, he's a battalion chief in New Jersey. He was telling me just 2 days ago that a success story he had was a student who had gone through the Courage to Be Safe class, went out and purchased a home and installed a residential sprinkler system in it, which is Initiative 15, talking about advocating the need for residential sprinklers. And he said that was from that class that individual directly went out and did that from what he learned. That's a true success. Wow, how great is that? Sometimes success stories, we don't know about them because they don't happen. It's kind of like fire prevention. You know, if we prevent it, we never know about it. We never respond to it. So it's hard to quantify and measure. But again, the implementation and the adopting and embedding of the program, the Georgia Fire Academy has taken the Courage to Be Safe program, and as well as the first resource kit, and I'm sure they'll do it with the others. And they've actually assigned course code numbers through the Georgia Firefighter Standards and Training Council. So now it's a certified class. In Georgia, you have to have a certain number of hours each year to maintain your firefighter certification. So these are now certified classes. They're embedded in the fire officer programs, the basic firefighter program. So that's a success story. And there's other states and colleges that are doing that as well. So I think there's a lot of good news out there. But we need to hear about it. So listeners who are listening today, we certainly want them to report in on those success stories.
And here's another success story that, in general terms, and you know that we're here in Chicago reviewing proposals for submissions at FRI. And when you look at the list of courses that are being offered by folks across the United States and what they want to submit, the categories that they've submitted in, by far the largest group, any one group, there's two that have a lot of impact. One is the diversity and human resource piece, and the next highest one is firefighter safety and survival. And so if you go back 5 or 6 or 7 years and go to these major conferences and you look in across the audience and see how many folks are there to receive the safety message or be the choir or for whatever reason, the numbers significantly go up year after year after year. To me, when you look at the room full of people that are there to listen about firefighter safety compared to years ago, that by itself is a success. That people really want tools to either help bring about change in their organizations or because maybe they're ready to receive the message themselves.
Excellent points. Where do people go for more information?
Go to www.everyonegoeshome.com. From that website, it'll take you days to go through and look at the amount of resources that are available. But obviously, that's a one-stop shop for us. You can reach out to the advocates. My email address is on there. Chief Dennis's email address is on there. You can find who your state advocates are. You can reach out to them to get information about how do you get a training, the CDBS training course in your area. And you can reach out to Chief Dennis on that. The resources that you can download, just simple 5-minute company operations or 5-minute company drills that you can just throw out there for company officers to say, all right, let's cover this today. Lots of resources. So
I want to point out too is the Fallen Firefighters Foundation is the group that's moving this forward from a network point of view because of the grant. We're not the only folks moving the initiatives forward. You have the Fire Department Safety Officers Association who are certifying safety officers at numbers never before heard of. People want to be certified safety officers. More and more departments are requiring company officers and battalion chiefs to be certified safety officers. That's an FDSOA program. You have the IAFF, the IAFC. You have the Western Fire Chiefs with their Take 5 drills that are absolutely believe and move these things forward. We're not the only organization that are moving our safety message forward. It's kind of going forward in concert. And as a matter of fact, we're having another safety summit in March in Emmitsburg. And one of the components of that summit is all the partner organizations, the major ones that came out of Tampa and are actively involved are going to be involved in a panel discussion in March to talk about where they're at as organizations. And I want to give them credit for the work that they're doing because, as Billy said, it's a Fallen Firefighters Foundation has taken ownership of what we're doing, but we don't own the initiatives. They belong to the fire service.
Yeah, as I stated earlier, that's a fire service product.
Right.
And came about that way.
And so I think that those are resources. Any one of those organizations that you might belong to or go to their websites, certainly firehero.org, which is the Fallen Firefighter Foundation master network. And then the other ones that I talked to about before, firefighterclosecalls.com, firstresponder.com, and some of the other ones.
Yeah, we'll put some links on the bottom of the player page here for the resources that the guests have spoken to during the podcast. Again, this is the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. I'm host Rich Gassaway in Chicago, Illinois, with Ron Dennis, the Executive Director of the Arizona Fire Chiefs Association and the Training Liaison for the Everyone Goes Home program, and Billy Hayes, the Director of Community Affairs for the Washington, D.C. Fire Department and the Advocate Manager for the Everyone Goes Home program. Gentlemen, your schedules are incredibly busy. I'm very humbled and appreciative for the time that you have given to sit down with me today and to talk about the 16 life safety initiatives, the Courage to Be Safe, and the Everyone Goes Home program. I sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, and thank you for all the listener feedback that we received. We certainly appreciate that. If you have questions for Leaders Toolbox, you can send those to podcasts@firehouse.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.